Continuing mitzvah, Tuf Chaf Aleph 421, mitzvahs tefillin shel yad. The mitzvah of tefillin of the arm. Masha amru, shetefillin tzrichin guf naki. It's about maybe a little less than two-thirds of the way in.
I've got it, thank you.
Good. Shetfilin tzrich and gufnaki. They have to have a clean body. V'amru b'gemara, my gufnaki. What does a clean body mean? She zoher shelo yafiach behen. That one is not allowed to pass gas while wearing tefillin. Aval ein ha'inyin lomar shetzrichin. That's why sometimes you see people in the middle of davening try surreptitiously, you know, moving their tefillin out of place. So you don't have to completely take it off. So if you need to pass gas while you're wearing tefillin, so you just take the tefillin, you move it out of the proper place, and then you'll be allowed to get in. But you're not supposed to do that when you're actually wearing the tefillin in their correct places. About ein ha'inyan, so that's what gufnaki means in this context, a clean body. Ein ha'inyan lomar shetzrichin gufnaki me'averus o'mituma. You could think, what's a clean body? Maybe it means that you're not supposed to have committed sins, or you are maybe tame, you're ritually impure. That's not what it means. That's not what gufnaki means in this context. Ki kol adam afilu tame u'bal averus mechuyev b'mitzvos tefillin. That even if you're ritually impure and you have committed many other sins, you're still required to wear a tefillin. As long as you know that you're not supposed to flatulate while wearing them.
So
it says the opposite. The bigger a sinner you are, the more reason there is for you to wear tefillin.
The correction.
Yeah. So it's because tefillin, says the Rambam, as we mentioned in the first year, I think, the idea that tefillin stimulate these acupressure points, whatever. But in any way, the Rambam and the Poskim clearly emphasize how wearing tefillin makes you feel more spiritual. So while you wear tefillin, nobody sins, hopefully. I mean, people are more conscious of themselves. People don't say Lashon Hara while they're wearing tefillin, hopefully. And they, even if you're not actually actively davening at the time, and people just feel generally holier. Helps them concentrate on learning sometimes. So that's why people like to wear tefillin for longer. But that feeling that you get from the tefillin is going to uplift you spiritually, and you're not going to want to sin anymore as much. So that's why it's good for sinners specifically to be makbid to wear tefillin. By the way, that's one reason that some people say, I heard this word from Rav Aaron Kahn, who's a Rosh Hashiva at YU, although you wouldn't know it from his dress. He dresses he dresses like a regular yeshivish Litvish Rosh Hashiva, is the only one. So he said this word, and the reason that the Vilna Gaon was so opposed to wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, they told the student, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that he shouldn't wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, even though Rav Chaim Volozhiner wanted to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, at least for part of the day. He said, the reason is because part of the mitzvah of tefillin is that it should make you feel more spiritual. So if you wear two pairs, that means you're constantly thinking that maybe these aren't real tefillin. Mm-hmm. So the Vilna Gaon held maybe that the reason that you should only wear one pair of tefillin, you should be confident and you should feel the spirituality, mm-hmm, and not be worried at the time you're wearing tefillin that maybe they're not the correct tefillin. That technically speaking, the Mishnah tells us that one is required to begin putting on tefillin at whatever age. As soon as you know how to behave correctly while wearing tefillin, that you should maintain the gufnaki, not pass gas, and that you should be able to treat them with the proper respect, take them off before going to the bathroom, etc. So once you're of that age, then you wear a tefillin. If there's a genius 6-year-old who knows how to do all these things, so then he would be wearing tefillin also. Yeah,
that's not the current practice, though.
Right? No, that's not the current practice. The current practice is that we don't really know how to keep the tefillin with a proper holiness, so therefore we only start wearing the tefillin at bar mitzvah. It's based on the sheet of the Itter, who's a loan sheet on the Rishonim, basically, who interprets this Mishnah as referring to only a bar mitzvah. Obviously, it's not the simple understanding. But what the Sefer HaChinuch presents a simple understanding. The way the vast majority of Rishonim present it is that the real halacha is that you're supposed to start wearing tefillin as soon as you know how to treat them properly.
But you know, but I don't think that you start practice anyway to have boys start with tefillin, you know, a little bit before to get themselves used to it.
Right. So that's
you don't want to, you know.
All right. That's not.
I remember this, but
so the reason that, so people have different minhagim. Some say only on the day of the bar mitzvah. Some say 1 month before. Some say 2 months before. Some say 3 months before. Fine. The point that all of these minhagim of the month or two or three before is basically the same idea, that even though in theory you should be starting only on the day of the bar mitzvah because you don't want to risk treating them with disrespect before you're really required to wear them, nevertheless, if you don't practice at least a little bit before, you're not going to wear them properly. You have to have a little bit of experience. So that's why we have the month or two. But there, again, they're different minhagim, and again, none of them are really rooted in the technical halacha, which is that you wear them as soon as you know how. Kozman shigiu lakalshi yedu lishmorosan. Umizei yishalhavin shadas rabuseinu zichranu l'bracha lios kol adamachzik v'mitzvah zo v'rogilba. That everybody should wear all... Well, in terms of divisions between genders, we'll see in a minute, but everybody who's chayiv in tefillin should wear tefillin. Ki ikar gadol shmira rabba min ha'averus. It's so important in preventing one from sinning. The sulam chazak, a strong ladder. La losi mal likanez b'avurus habori baruchu. That's like the tefillin constitute a ladder towards God, that you wear them and you automatically almost go up spiritually. And there were some people, though, in the times of the Rishonim that the Sefer Chinuch is about to denigrate, who used to tell people that really you shouldn't be wearing tefillin. Right, he says, Machmir b'kedushas mitzvah. They say tefillin are so holy, unless you're on a really high spiritual level, you shouldn't be wearing tefillin at all. So he used to tell you people not to do it. So the Sefer Chinuch says that that's bad. Umaniyim leiv ha'amon b'divrayim. They used to get people so scared that you couldn't have any improper thoughts and improper speech and your bodily functions and all these things at the time of you wearing tefillin. So they used to get people used to be too afraid to put them on. They have good intentions, probably. Aval be'emes yish b'zeh meniyah livnei adam. This makes it prevents people from doing a mitzvah. B'chama mitzvah is the raw rabba. It's really bad. Don't do that. Really, that's why the minhag nowadays, again, that everybody who's chayiv and tefillin does wear tefillin from the age of bar mitzvah, even though one could argue that perhaps teenage boys are not the best candidates for this mitzvah. But nevertheless, we do have this practice nowadays that everybody wears tefillin. But again, we pointed out that in terms of the Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, so in most circles, one only starts wearing Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin after marriage, because at that point, one is considered to be more responsible and holier. So you don't do something that's only a chumrah, assuming Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin is only a chumrah, but you don't do something that's only a chumrah, or according to Kabbalah, until after you're married.
Is there a prohibition against women's wearing? Oh,
we'll get there. That people who scare people out of wearing tefillin cite this story in the Talmud Yerushalmi. There was one person who gave his friend a silver cup to watch over. Well, his man, Tavini, Alev Chafar Bey, eventually said, "No, can I have? I need my silver cup back. Give me my silver cup back." And the guy said, "What silver cup? I don't have any silver cup of yours." The Amar Lei Balakos, Lo Lach Emenis Ela Leilein Sheberoshach. When I gave you the silver cup originally, I wasn't trusting you to give it back to me. What I was trusting was that box on your head.
Oh.
I thought you were that someone wearing tefillin would never do such a thing, that if you wear tefillin, you must be so frum that you would never deny having received a pikodon.
So it's not new, is it
now? Obviously, it's a desecration of the name of God if one is extremely punctilious about certain mitzvos and not about others. So if you're on the same level about all things, if you're a little shvach, and a little shvach in bein adam lamakom, so that's not good, but it's not a chil Hashem if you're known to be this type of person. But if you are the pillar of your community and you're makbid, You know, you'd only the best hechsher and to give the most tzedakah, and you'd learn the most, and you give shiurim, and then you're found to be, I don't know, cheating on your taxes or something. That's obviously a much bigger chil Hashem. Yeah. Yeah, but that's legitimate. Not doing that is legitimate, but the attitude is legitimate because lemaisa, there's something that everybody does. So even if it's a really bad thing, so societally speaking, so it's less problematic.
Right. Great. So it doesn't really matter.
No, and not that you're allowed to do it. You're not, even if everyone was cheating on the taxes, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. If everybody's eating pork, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. But the mice is that more Orthodox, I can say it this way, but more Orthodox Jews cheat on their taxes than eat pork. So it's a more common thing. In other words, Sefer Chinuch, his initial reading of this story that would potentially give support to the people who were trying to scare people out of wearing tefillin is that you shouldn't wear tefillin unless you're really punctilious. Mm-hmm. But then he says, what? There's nobody who's 100% free of sin. Nevertheless, he thinks that, okay, yeah, you can't do something obviously cheating, but it's not, nevertheless, even if you're not perfect in all other areas, you should still wear tefillin, because the more mitzvahs, the better. This is one of the disagreements between Satmar and Lubavitch. So, because one of the things that Chabad is very into doing are these tefillin campaigns. They want to get all Jews to put on tefillin. So one of the reasons that Satmar wasn't so through this, they said, "But what business do not from Jews have putting on tefillin?" So that's, again, that's an extreme. The Sefer Chinuch here is not talking about people who are not from at all. They're talking about people who are commit other sins but want to try to do religious things as much as possible. If somebody is completely not from, completely doesn't know anything about the holiness of tefillin, so what business do they have putting on the tefillin?
It's still a mitzvah.
I understand, but so you're arguing like Chabad, okay?
No, basically,
I met your wife last night. She told me she's Chabad background, so it's understandable you'd be sympathetic.
No, but in general, if someone does, is it better to do as many mitzvahs as you can, or is it if I'm not either you do it all or you don't do it all?
Nobody says that if you don't do all the mitzvahs, you shouldn't do any mitzvahs. The point is specifically singling out the mitzvah of tefillin because it requires an extra high and heightened sense of holiness and holy behavior.
But I mean, Chabad does, you know, other mitzvahs, right? Shabbos candles and, you know, lulav and, you know, that they get.
Yeah. So that's for sure fine. The only thing Satmar had another problem with Lubavitch is that you're encouraging not from people to make a bracha. So it says not proper for not from people to make a bracha if they don't really believe the words they're saying.
Yeah.
We don't say Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, and they're just saying it by rote, and they don't even necessarily believe in God. So then it's considered to be more of a slap in the face to make a bracha. That's silly. And
they did it to make you happy, to get you off their case.
Right. Yeah. Right. Oh, if they're genuinely interested, that's one thing. Yeah, okay. But there's what to be said on both sides.
Deep down, all Jews want to perform.
All the mitzvahs, yeah. No. Yeah, so Chabad, yeah, so they're into to different
so
different mitzvahs.
Do they feel like Jews shouldn't daven in Hebrew if they don't understand it?
No.
No, I'm talking about the Satmar group. I mean,
As long as you believe it.
But the question is, if you don't understand what you're
saying, it's not a matter of understanding. It's a matter of believing in their opinion. Everybody agrees that you're allowed to daven in Hebrew even if you don't understand it, as long as you fundamentally accept the concept over there. Whatever. Kimi yodea im ulai yimoshech bedarko hatova at eis moso v'hamoves pisom tavo. So do as much as you can before you die, because death comes suddenly. Uchvar limdunu zichron levracha shemitzvah goreres mitzvah. That you should do as many mitzvahs as possible, even if you're not quite holding there, shall we say. Because the more you're used to doing mitzvahs and you get in the habit of it, you're going to be drawn into doing other mitzvahs. One mitzvah leads to another. But it's just schar mitzvah. The reward of a mitzvah is doing another mitzvah, because you're going to go from strength to strength. V'chol eila advarim umusarim tovim kidmunu varun zicharan levracha. That's what our sages taught us. Amischakmim lehosiv al divrem oligroa eina chachma. If you change what they're trying to tell us, this is not This is not wisdom. Asha Amru, what did the Chazal tell us? Shesidur HaParshios B'Klafa Tfilin Kachu, that the order of the Parshios is thus. Shekos V'Ntchila Parshios Kadishli, V'Achar Kach Parshios V'Akiv Yachal, V'Achar Kach Parshios Shema Yisrael, V'Achar Kach Parshios V'Yam Shemo, and the order that they're written in the Torah, you write the four Parshios on the Klaf of the Shalyad. Asher Amru Shekosim Havayos B'Amtza, again we mentioned in the first year on Tfilin that there's a different shita that of Rabbeinu Tam and many Rishonim, that actually Vayayim Shemoa should come before Shema. Kilomar Parshas Vayikiv Yachal Parshas Vayim Shemoa B'Amtza Parshas Kadosh Li Barosh Parshas Shema Basof. Lo Kivnu En Yanaf Yafe. The Sefer HaChinuch rules like Rashi, not like Rabbeinu Tam, following in the school of the Ramban and the Rashba and Rabbeinu Yonah. A lot of Svartic authorities who held like Rashi. They wrote tshuvas that argued that the halacha was in accordance with Rashi. V'hari Rashi v'Rambam Rabbeinu Haizal Kulam Das Achas Shlo Nichtov Avayos B'Amtza. So all those authorities rule that you write the parashias in the order that they appear in the Torah, which is interesting because Rav Hai is quoted both ways. Among the Rishonim, some Rishonim write the Rav Hai held like Rashi, some hold the Rav Hai held like Rabbeinu Tam. Okay.
Did Rabbeinu Tam wear Rashi film?
No. Rabbeinu Tam didn't wear Rashi film. Rabbeinu Tam held that he was right.
I had said I had to leave earlier.
Yeah, okay.
I think this is beyond it. There's nothing left in the zipper. I would suggest getting a new one.
Okay. This way, thank you.
Now there's no pull and there's no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Obviously, if you're writing out, Sukkim and Zohar clock.
Yeah.
Let's say for example, the shul uses the Haftarah as the clock.
Mm-hmm. It's a Shem by us.
What? Yeah. Right. Okay. Then. Is it okay to go ahead and basically just leave out the parts that you don't say? In other words, like, say your particular minhag is,
Haftorah scroll?
Haftorah scroll, yeah.
What? Yeah, the Gemara talks about how not everybody could afford a whole set of Nevi'im, so they used to just write the Haftorahs on the Klaf, and that's really not correct according to Halacha, because when you write an official scroll, you're not supposed to write less than a whole Sefer.
Oh, okay, right, that's it, Ronnie. Yeah.
So, but the Gemara says, since people had to say Haftorah and they didn't have access to all the Navi scrolls, mm-hmm. So you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to write the Haftorahs because of Ace Lassos, that if you don't do it, so then you're going to lose out on the opportunity of saying Haftorah.
And I believe you complained about our shul not having...
We should. It's more correct. It's really much more correct to have a Haftorah scroll. I actually might have access to a used one. But we'll see. Yeah.
The Baal Kori would have to do a lot more work then.
Right? Oh, yes. Except since it's not an official scroll of the whole book, so you're allowed to put nekudas. You're allowed to put vowels and tamim. So really, there's no chisaron. There's no disadvantage to a Haftorah scroll. And it's much more advantageous because really... what we rely upon with the printed books is, well, first of all, there were opinions that in the old printing, with an actual printing press, so that has a din of ksiva, of writing.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Because you have a person who's actually making an imprint of the letters on the paper, and we hold maybe that you don't need the Haftorah scrolls to be written on klaf. So maybe paper is good, but at least it's written. So therefore, they held you could use that for a Haftorah.
But as much because somebody manually pulls down the press.
But, obviously, that's not true anymore. So that hasn't been true for years.
So 100%. So with modern photo offset laser printed books, so it's not like that. So it's not like that at all. Everybody agrees that doesn't have a din of ksiva, doesn't have a din of writing. So we rely on a shita that holds you're even allowed to say the Haftorah from memory, orally, without any written text, which is really not ideal. Really, it's much more correct to have a sifra daftarta, haftorah scroll, if you don't have...
Even if it's not a complete navi, it's better to have...
Yeah, at least it's written. At least it's a really written on klaf, yeah.
Rather than a navi that is in a printed...
Way, 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 way better, yes. Much, much, much better.
So look into this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but that scroll, the used one that I found, does not have the vowels. So we'd have to add them.
Okay, so...
But, it'd be tedious, but...
you mention it now and then, so...
It really is more correct, yeah.
Very sympathetic, right, mm-hmm. Maybe.
I don't know. It's just the money. If it's, again, you could. I understand the complaint. If you weren't allowed to have vowels, people have to prepare it. Although, I'm sure Mordechai could do it, but...
Number of people who could be given Haftorah would...
Right. So, I mean, you would then, if you didn't lay in it, so then it would just be like you getting an aliyah, that you would just make the brachas and then the Baal Kori would lay in the haftorah. In a lot of places they do that.
Oh, at least also you could, you know, have exactly your particular minhag, you know, so you leave out the parts that only the Sephardim say and only the, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah. You could do that 100%. Okay, so something to look into. The raya mimasha nimsa beperek hakomeitz miminoches gabi sidur hatfilin shamrisham kore kesidran. So the text of the Gemara that if you're looking at someone wearing tefillin, so the order of the shel rosh that you're looking at goes in accordance with the order that they're in the Torah, which is like Rashi. Even though Rabbeinu Tam interprets even that as supporting his shita, but okay. So if you hold like Rabbeinu Tam, so obviously this text was not found in the Gemara, that Hakore Kore Kesidra, and that somebody looking would read in the order of the Chumash. That was again was the general opinion in Spain at the time. Vadin ksivasan, how are they written? They have to be written by hand. They have to be written lishma, written with ink, as we mentioned last time. What dio is. Vadin atagin shebahem. So in terms of the crowns on the letters, so there are different opinions. One opinion is that every letter is shot in his guest. So the Gemara says that seven letters need tagim. Shin, ayin, tes, nun, zayin, gimel, tzadi. So the question is, what exactly does that mean? I drew a nice picture a while ago about one opinion means that it's just that the left head of those letters has three points on it, which I explain how that was the case in the old style of writing. And others hold, no, it's not the points of the heads, it's crowns on the letters. But what does it mean, the crowns on the letters? So the Gemara talks about how Reb Akiva used to darshan halachis from the crowns on the letters. So the question is, if every letter, shin, ayin, tes, nun, gimel, zayin, tzadi, I think I'm missing one, but whatever, you get the idea, has crowns on it, then how would he darshan? They're all the same, so then what did he darshan? So it seems that the Gemara was referring to that there were special crowns added for emphasis. And certain letters for drasha purposes, and you see in very old Sifrei Torah, there's often the case that you have random letters then throughout the Chumash that have tagim on them, like at special points. And you have also letters that are written in odd manners. You have something called a pelafufa, where the inside thing of the... Is this yours? What? Oh. Which is like, you have a pay, and then instead of just like that, it curls again like that. If you have funny letters, you have a ches, that has like two little feet on it. Whatever, that's obviously... I don't think that would be kosher the way I drew it, but you got the idea. So you have for these funny letters for drasha purposes, and the same thing. What the Gemara is referring to about the Shatnez gates is that in a mezuzah specifically, it's those letters. It's only the letters shin ayin tes nun zayin gimel tzadi that have those crowns, and only a certain of those letters, not all of those letters, for drasha purposes. So yeah.
No, but okay, it has to be written though in the commercial, the Syrian, the script.
Tzav Ashuri, it's called.
Yeah. It's not the earlier.
Oh, the Tzav Ivri, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Paleo Hebrew script. So it's. Yeah, it historically.
It was known in the times of the Gemara. It wasn't just archaeology.
It wasn't used in the times of the Gemara anymore, but it was already not used in the in times of the Tanoim. You have a few of the Dead Sea Scrolls actually that are written in. I don't remember if you have any that already have the whole text written in Ksav Ivri, but you have some Dead Sea Scrolls where the whole thing is in Ksav Ashuri except Shem Hashem, which is written in Ksav Ivri, because that sect, as opposed to us, that we consider Ksav Ashuri holier. But that sect apparently considered the Paleo Hebrew script holier, because it was so they used to put Shem Hashem in Ksav Ivri. So we hold that that's no good. You're not allowed to make Shem Hashem different in any way from the rest of the Ksav. There were people in the times of Chazal who used to write Shem Hashem with gold. Instead of regular ink, they used to write it with gold. So the Gemara says that that's puzzle.
Like a red leather Bible. You know, right?
Something like that. Yeah. So that's puzzle. That is no good.
What was Moshe Rabbeinu's
It's a good question. The Gemara has a disagreement already about whether the Aluchos were written in Ksav Ivri or Ksav Ashuri.
Ten Commandments, it was Ksav Ivri.
And Ten Commandments was Ksav Ivri, yes, in the movie, yes. In the movie. So it's not exactly clear. Again, historically speaking, we assume that Ksav Ivri is the earlier, and Ksav Ashuri is a cursive script that develops from the Ksav Ivri. But that's not, theologically, that's not necessarily the way we assume, yeah.
Is it known whether the claim that Samaritans make that they have a Sefer Torah that's in Ksav Ivri?
Well, they use a variant of Ksav Ivri. They use a script that's also a descendant of Ksav Ivri. It looks a little bit more like Ksav Ivri than our Ksav Ashuri. Yeah. So they have to be written. That's a good point that he doesn't mention explicitly the Sefer Chinuch, that tefillin are required to be written in Ksav Ashuri. They're not kosher in anything else, as opposed to a Sefer Torah, which is kosher in Greek.
Oh.
In theory. It's kosher. But
Hebrew words, but Greek letters.
Maybe. No. In Greek. So the Rambam. So it's that he calls that a kosher Sifrei Torah. It's very odd for us to understand nowadays. The Rambam already writes that we don't know the exact way to write a Greek Sifrei Torah. So nowadays we only use Ksav Ashuri in Hebrew for all of the holy scrolls. V'din hakose bohenes Hashem bein hashitin o'os achas mi'an madino. So in a Sefer Torah, you have, or other scrolls, Megillah, for example, in the Nevi'im, you have the possibility of making corrections. Because remember, in the old type of Gvil, it was very, very difficult to make corrections. So if you left out a word, for example, or a letter, you could just stick it on top of where it was supposed to be. But some people, you know, you find some people freak out. They call me. They send me pictures. You know, we have a Sefer Torah, and there's a letter that's on top of another word. It's possible. Oh, my gosh. I said, no, relax. The Gemara says that's perfectly fine. It's perfectly kosher. And the minhag is not to do it nowadays because it's on parchment. It's much easier to make corrections and looks nicer without it. So it's most people don't do it anymore. But al-Pri Halacha, there's no problem whatsoever. You're also allowed, if you leave out Shem Hashem, you are allowed to put Shem Hashem in between the two words where it's supposed to be on top. But you're not allowed to. It has to be the whole Shem. In other words, in a normal word, you could put just one letter, on top. But in Shem Hashem, it has to be either the whole Shem in the line or the whole Shem in between the lines. But all of this is no good for Tefillin. Mm-hmm. Tefillin and Mitzvahs are not allowed to have any letters or words in between the lines. They all have to be written in the proper order. And in fact, we paskin that not only that, but Tefillin and Mitzvahs have to be written in the order that they appear. In other words, you have to write Vaidaber Vav Yud Dalad Beis Reish. If you write it Vav Yud and then you leave a space and you have whatever, you cannot write them out of order, which is as opposed to a Sefer Torah, which obviously if you had to write the whole Sefer Torah in order, there'd be no kosher Sefer Torah because it's almost impossible not to make a mistake for the entire Sefer Torah. So this rule applies. So it's in the certain Rishonim, it's not clear. They might have interpreted this rule somewhat differently, but the very strongly accepted psak nowadays is that all the tefillin and mezuzahs must be written in order. So if you find an error, so you can't just erase in the middle and rewrite the part in the middle. You have to go back all the way to the place that you have to erase all the way back. And the problem is that if you have a Shem Hashem that you're not allowed to erase, then you have a real issue. So, if you find a mistake though in the last few words, like Kimei Hashemayim al Haaretz, you found there was a mistake. So that would be no problem to erase and rewrite because there's no Hashem there. But if you find a mistake before the last Shem in Parshas Vayom Shamoa, then you would have to chop off Parshas Vayim Shemo, and you have to write a new Parsha and stick it together with the rest of the Tefillin. If it was a Shia, there just obviously it would be easier. If it was a Shel Rosh, you just put in the correct casing. V'din ibud ha'or, that the skin that you write upon must be a kosher animal skin. It's interesting that you could technically use bird skin, but since there are so many holes, it's very difficult to use. Bird skin,
chicken skin, or something.
It has to be a kosher bird. Umeizetzad min ha'or heinichtoven. You write on the side that's called klaf. We were talked a little bit before about which side is klaf. There's a machlokus about it. But you're not allowed to use fish skin to write tefillin because the poskim write that it still stinks even after tanning. So you doesn't, yeah. But they has to be written on some type of animal skin. But the animal does not have to be shechted. It has to be a kosher type of animal. But if it's died on its own or was killed in another manner, or it's a treifa, it had a defect that would render it so that you wouldn't be allowed to eat it. All of these would still be acceptable for use in tefillin and mezuzis, as long as it is a kosher species of animal. Yeah.
There's some chassidish idea that you davka should use like a treifa animal, because that way, you know, you're elevating the kedusha of which other.
That sounds familiar, but the more normative approach is that it's actually holier to use an animal that did have shechita.
Sounds, you think that.
Again, it's not halachically required at all, but some mikubalim or people who are into these things want to try to get tefillin that were written on the skin of an animal, and then the case in your made for an animal that had a proper shechita, because they say that it's holier that way. But again, not required al pi halacha. And in fact, you'll appreciate this. There was something called I saw an advertisement for it many years ago, but not since. Something called vegetarian tefillin. What's vegetarian tefillin? Obviously, you can't write it on paper. That's puzzle. Has to be an animal skin. What's vegetarian tefillin? It was tefillin made from animals that died of natural causes. Mm-hmm. It's 100% kosher. If you're really sensitive to such things, you will be allowed. But they don't usually do this because the skin is a lower quality, mm-hmm. usually, than skin that was shechted. And actually, it's considered the holiest type of skin to use the skin of an animal that was a fetus, actually.
Really?
To use, yeah. They take
Would
the...
Would that be big enough?
A cow fetus is pretty big. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes cloth manufacturers call it shlil, which is fetus skin, but it's not really fetus skin, it was just from a very young animal. But if you want real fetus skin, so it is. V'dinim ksavan min ogoy. What happens if a heretic or a Gentile writes the tefillin? So you guessed it, the tefillin are pasul. And to be actually, a woman is not allowed to write tefillin or mezuzis either, or Sefer Torah, because it says, ukshartam los al yodecha v'yulito tevos benach savtam. So the whole pasuk talks about wearing tefillin, and then it says, then you should write the mezuzah, even though a woman is chayiv in mezuzah, but she's not chayiv in tefillin, and she still cannot write a mezuzah or a sefer Torah, because it's all thrown in together, that only someone who's chayiv in tefillin, who's required in the mitzvah of tefillin, is allowed to be a sofer. So...
Right, Megillah is right.
So according to most shittas, a woman is allowed to write a Megillah. That's about the only thing that she can write in terms of official safras.
But she's not required for the Megillah. Oh, yes,
she is required, yeah. A woman is required for the Megillah, yes. V'din. So they have this new thing. It's creating problems, perhaps, that you have sofrot. And in the non-Orthodox denomination, so they have women who are writing Sefer Torah and other things. So it's a problem that if these things get mixed in somehow to the regular circulation, that would be really, really bad, because they're really puzzle. So you have Orthodox sofrot that write only Megillahs. They limit themselves to Megillahs. Obviously, other calligraphy projects that don't require Safra skill, like you can write a ksuba, obviously, but I think that's a waste of money. So people come to me and they say they want me to write them a ksuba. Why? Brent printed on the computer. Why? Why do you pay money for this? I don't get it.
Do you want it handwritten?
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it.
They don't put it on a wall and they don't like that.
I think it's a waste.
Well, how much I owe my wife in case I divorce her. Right.
Right.
What a great thing to have on a wall.
Right. You sound like Rabbi Bleich. That's what
you say, yeah. It's like Hidur mitzvah.
It's not a mitzvah. The ksuba, is just a document. There's no mitzvah per se. If you want to live with your wife, so you have to write her a ksuba. It's not a mitzvah independently to write a ksuba that you could say that there's a... And it, there's a thing of heder mitzvah involved here.
It's like a sales contract for a shul, you know, right? You're not going to have to go to a lot of trouble for that.
So some posts could actually quote, there is a minhag to put the ksuba on the wall because that way you don't lose it. But there's no... I think it's a waste of money, but whatever. Everybody has their own things that they're into, and far be it for me to judge. V'din she'einan tzrichem bedika v'afilu me'ashana kimo mezuzah. So what does this mean? That tefillin don't need to be checked even 100 years, just like mezuzah. So I think what he probably means is that mezuzah we know does have to be checked every 3.5 years. So tefillin do not have to be checked. So it probably means she'einan tzrichem bedika da kimo mezuzah. They don't need to be checked like a mezuzah needs to be checked. Rather, tefillin don't need to be checked at all. So what's the reason for this? So mezuzah is in your house. Could be maybe on your outside door. Could be rained on. There could be mold. There could be exposure to moisture. So therefore, you have to check a mezuzah every 3.5 years. But tefillin, you don't have to check because they're enclosed in their casing. So both of these assumptions have been somewhat challenged by contemporary poskim. So first of all, there is a sheet on the Gemara that you do have to check tefillin, even though most Rishonim don't paskin that way. There is such a shita. And also so nowadays it's the situation is mamish the opposite, which is funny because nowadays we keep mezuzahs for the most part. Most people wrap them in saran wrap and you keep them in very sturdy cases. So for a mezuzah to deteriorate to the extent that it would become pusel in 3.5 years is almost completely unheard of. So maybe you should have longer to check your mezuzahs. Maybe you should only check them every 7, 15, whatever, however many years. And tefillin, the situation is worse than it used to be because of the ink. So we mentioned that the ink that we use nowadays for writing tefillin, and all stam for the again, unless you have one of the newfangled inks, is an iron-based ink which rusts and flakes and turns red. So really, tefillin are much more likely to become pusel than it was in the time of the times of the Gemara. That's why nowadays many poskim say that you don't need to check mezuzahs as frequently, and most poskim recommend that one should check one's tefillin from time to time. Again, it doesn't have to be every. Some people come to me, I haven't had my tefillin checked in 5 years or 7 years. Or, oh my gosh, I have to get my tefillin checked. Relax. You know, I would say the normal recommendation is that once you get one's tefillin checked a couple years after the bar mitzvah, just to make sure everything is still in order and the folding and stuff didn't cause any problems. And then after that, if they're found to be in good condition and unlikely to deteriorate, so then every couple decades.
What causes letters to, you know, become puzzled? Was it that they thought...
One thing about the tefillin shel rosh is that the parshas instead of being rolled are actually folded, so there are sharp creases.
Oh, okay, right.
So the ink can flake off where there are creases. Mm-hmm. And in addition, if the tefillin are very old, the letters could turn reddish, which could be a problem. Yeah.
So mezuzahs have different ink?
No. Mezuzahs have the same ink, but nothing's going to happen in 3.5 years. We're talking decades.
Could they fade? Is that
possible? Sure.
I mean, without flaking off, just fade.
Well, they turn red, and they don't even normally just, the color doesn't normally fade.
Oh. Or could the cloth turn dark so that you couldn't, you know, is that ever a problem?
To be puzzle, I mean, the should be black, that the letters shouldn't be recognizable at all. Someone once made for me a special order of cloth for tefillin, according to certain specifications, and it came out very, very, very dark brown. So you could barely see the letters, but there's no halachic problem with that per se. It doesn't look so nice.
And I assume it was possible for cloth to rot, right?
It's possible.
If it's very humid or something like that, I think.
Out of humidity in the air for it to rot, maybe.
All right.
Climate, I don't know.
Yeah, if you live in a very humid climate, so maybe you should. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should get a check more often. Mm-hmm. V'din halokeach tefillin mimi she'eino mumche. So if you purchase tefillin from someone who's not an expert sofer, then you're supposed to check a sample. Let's say you buy 100 pairs, you check 3, you check a sample of all of the batches that he gives you, and then you could rely on the rest. V'din tviros and begidin shel behemo chayat tahora. You have to sew it with the sinews of a wild animal or a domesticated animal that's kosher. V'din tefillin shenifsiku hatfiro shelahen o ritzuoseyan. And if the stitches get snapped, they snap, then as long – it depends where it is. If it's a corner stitch, it's more of a problem. If it's a middle stitch, it's not a problem because it still has to look square. So as long as only a couple stitches in different places so that it looks square still, then you would not have to resew it. But if it was a stitch that would cause it to look no longer square, then you would have to resew it. And if the ritsua, same thing. If they snapped off beyond the minimum shear, then you have to replace the ritsua, so you're not allowed to sew them. V'din, misha, tefillin, olav, etzorich lechol. If you want to eat while you're wearing tefillin, so you are allowed to eat a small meal or snack, but you're not allowed to eat a bread meal. Oli kones beveis hakiseh, you're not allowed to go into a beis hakiseh, a bathroom, with tefillin, even if you're not using it. You're not allowed to go into a room that's designated for you're relieving oneself, unless it's just the room only has urinals, in which case we pointed out in the first year on tefillin, that according to the technical halacha, one is allowed to even urinate in a place that's not that's designated only for urination, wearing tefillin. Kavua arai, so a basic you say arai, where you only go in for urination, so then it's okay. Osha shachach v'nichnas behen, so then you have to if you're doing your business in the bathroom and then you remember, whoops, I have my tefillin on. Ah, what should I do? So if you could take them off without getting them dirty, you should do that. But if not, you should just cover them. There's also a case in similarly where they discuss what happens if you forgot and you had relations with one's spouse wearing tefillin. So what? It's such an odd. Again, tefillin used to be small and unobtrusive, so maybe that's less. It's such a strange concept to. Neither of them noticed that he was wearing tefillin. Okay.
So what are you supposed to do?
You're supposed to take them off without getting them dirty, if possible.
Yeah.
This is Shaila. Never heard of the Shaila coming up nowadays. V'din hanichnas ben leveis hamerchatz. What about going into a bathhouse? So in the bathhouse, we know classically there are three rooms. There's the outer room. I mean, it's not done this way anymore, but in times of Chazal, there was an outer room where people finished getting dressed. So everybody in there was basically had at least undergarments on. Then there was the middle room where people finished getting undressed and started to get dressed. So some people were naked, some people were somewhat clothed. And then you have the inner room where everybody's bathing. So in such a situation, in the outer room, you're allowed, where everybody's clothed, you're allowed to put on the tefillin and make a bracha. In the middle room, you don't have to take the tefillin off. If you find yourself there, but you're not allowed to put them on in such a room. And in the inner room, if you find it where everybody is unclothed, so then you have to take your tefillin off, even if you're just wearing it. B'yeser prati ha-mitzvah midvarim ha-menachas v'ergvi. It's found in the fourth parak of Maseches Menachas. B'noheges mitzvah zo b'chol makom v'chol zman. This applies in all places and all times. B'zcharim avalo bin kevos.
We can't discuss this now.
Oh, yeah. Chaval, she's missing this. Oh, she'll listen to the recording. We'll just listen to the last...
Okay, then go quick.
So it's a time-bound positive commandment because it's either only applicable during the daytime, according to some opinions, or because it's only applicable on weekdays and not on Shabbos and Yontif. Umikol makom imrotzu lahaniach ein memachin biyada muschar yesh lahen. Says the Sefer Achinuch, if a woman wants to wear tefillin, gizuntahet. No problem. Just like any other, just like if she wants to shake lulav, no problem. Avalok ischar haish. It's not, doesn't receive the same reward as a man who's required to wear tefillin. When you're commanded in something and you do it, you receive greater reward than if you're not commanded and you volunteer to do it. So let's just stop here. Let's tell, why was there this whole controversy surrounding this SAR, remember? Maseches Erevin Bereish Perek Amotzei Tefillin Amr Zichron Al-Racha Shemichal Bas Kushi Haisa Manachas Tefillin Michal Kushi Shal that she used to put on tefillin. That's what the Chazal tell us. The Yonah, the prophet's wife, used to go to the three pilgrimage festivals along with all the men, and they didn't stop her. So the problem, so the issue is, and the Shulchan Aruch does say you're supposed to stop a woman if she wants to wear, you're supposed to prevent her from wearing tefillin if she wants to wear tefillin. The idea being, should we put this delicately or not delicately? That if the, some people, there are different approaches to how it is. There's some approaches that say a woman is not as spiritually inclined as men, so she's not going to treat the tefillin with a proper respect. That's,
in other places they say she's more spiritual.
Yeah. So that's one approach. And the other approach is, there's nothing to do with judging each individual person's ability to take care of the tefillin properly and act properly while wearing the tefillin. But it's just in general, just like nowadays we don't generally allow boys to wear tefillin before the bar mitzvah, before they're, you know, a couple of months planning for the bar mitzvah, because we don't want, again, we accept the Sefer Chinuch's idea that we shouldn't have a wholesale neglect of mitzvah tefillin because we're so scared that we're not going to treat them properly. But nevertheless, we try to limit it to only the minimum. That's why even men, most of the time, only wear tefillin in the morning. That they don't wear tefillin all day. And furthermore, you don't have boys putting on tefillin before much before bar mitzvah, because you want to limit it to the absolute necessity, lest we risk offending the mitzvah of tefillin, which is why, again, the Sefer Chinuch was not going like this. It's important to realize that. But the normative halacha is that women are discouraged from wearing tefillin.
But it isn't usher then.
Is there a question of a minhag?
No, wait, sorry. No, I'm not trying to undermine.
I don't think, yeah.
I'm astonished because the degree of hysterics
I cannot,
is so great these days.
I could not use the word usher, no.
Right. Even by Sfardim?
Svardim, why? Oh, that would be a shun of the bracha, not the wearing.
Okay.
A Svardi woman who wants to wear a tefillin would definitely not make a bracha, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But the issues are the same.
Shulchan Aruch, but that doesn't exclude, obviously, the...
Oh, I meant the Rama. The Rama and Shulchan Aruch. It was the Rama. That actually happens to be the Rama's comment.
Okay.
But it's included in the Shulchan Aruch. So what are you saying?
Yeah, is that a minhag, basically, as far as that goes?
It's hard to know what you call a minhag officially and what you don't call a minhag officially, but the accepted practice nowadays is that women don't wear tefillin. So if a woman wants to, again, people do all sorts of weird things nowadays. So I mean, you have people who accept chumras that are not really rooted in basic halacha. And so they try to do it individually. They try to not make a big deal out of it. So the same should apply to a woman who wants to depart from the practice. If, again, there could be a I don't know. There's some riskers, whatever. I mean, some of them do make a big deal about their chumras, which is not correct. But there are some very pious people who want to accept certain chumras. They do their best to keep other people from knowing the extent of how machmir they are. So I would say the same should apply to a woman who wants to depart from the accepted practice, and she wants to wear tefillin, that if she's really up to it, and she wants to do it in private and not rock the boat. So I don't have as much of a problem with that as with this idea at SAR of publicly saying that we're going to allow all girls to wear tefillin. Yeah.
Well, same time, you know, if you're say a yeka and you're davening at Dumbrov and Chol HaMoed.
Yeah.
You really shouldn't. You know, daven with the tefillin on. I mean, if you're, you know, right,
yes.
So you could put them on at home or something, right? You know, it's not,
you shouldn't daven in Dabrav on Chol HaMoed if you wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Okay. Yeah, it's really not right. That's also, but that's also different. That's not a practice that's totally commonly accepted by Klal Yisrael. There are people who wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, and there are people who don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So. That's also slightly different. That's a different thing, that when you're actually visually doing something different from everyone else, that's really not correct. That when you have two different minhagim in one congregation is no good. You see people sometimes in broyers, even, that they don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, so it's really not right. You should suck up your own pride of your own ancestral minhagim, and you should put on the tefillin. You may have kavana not to be yotzei or something. So you don't, if you don't want to violate your minhag that much, but really, it's a very, very important principle in Judaism that within one congregation, one should not do things that are visually different. Again, here at Mount Sinai, for example, so there's not really one set absolute minhag, and so people do whatever they want. So there's that's. But if there is a congregation, like a Chassidus shul or a Sephardi shul or a Yekesh shul, those have opposite practices, obviously, but one should adhere there while one's davening there. To the same thing applies, for other things like in Ashkenaz, even though it's not halachically required. So the minhag of Ashkenazim nowadays pretty much is to stand during Kaddish, whenever there's a Kaddish. So Sephardim follow the basic halacha, which is that you don't davka need to stand while you hear Kaddish. It's only if you happen to be standing when the Kaddish begins, you're not supposed to sit down in the middle. You're supposed to remain standing. So, same thing. If Ashkenazi is davening in a Sephardi shul, Ashkenazi should not stand for Kaddish. He should remain seated. And if a Sephardi is davening in Ashkenazi shul, they should stand for Kaddish at the times where everybody else is standing. Rav Yoshev went so far as to say that even in Kabbalah Shabbos, where you have a very late Kabbalah Shabbos is a very recent development, and there's some people who have the minhag, there's some shuls that have the minhag practice, whatever, to stand for Mizmor LeDavid that right before Lechadodi. So that's not obviously halachically required. Some people stand, some people don't stand. But Rav Yoshev was said that even if you are just saying Kabbalah Shabbos more slowly, and you're still in an earlier chapter of Kabbalah Shabbos, you're not even up to there yet, so you have a good reason to be still sitting. And even nevertheless, when the congregation is up to that Mizmor, even though it's such a not important thing, nothing really rooted in halacha, you're not allowed to remain seated at the time that the rest of the congregation is standing, which the Chazal tell us, don't be an omed bein ayoshvim or a yoshe bein omdim. Don't be a sitter among standers or a stander among sitters. So it really is a very important principle that people should be aware of, that it's very, very, very important to respect the practices of the congregation in which one finds oneself.
Well, one thing that it seems there's never a consistency on is whether you stand during the repetition of the Shemoneh Esrei. I've never been in a shul where I did the same thing. Of the millions of shuls I've been in, but I mean, I haven't seen that.
That's a little different because by Kaddish, everybody agrees that real halacha is that you do not have to stand during Kaddish, and it's only a minhag to stand. By standing for Chazar Seshatz, either you're halachically required to stand or you're not halachically required to stand. So it's more the idea that some people are machmir, that they halachically they want to stand because of halachic reasons, and some people follow the opinion that you're allowed to sit during Chazar Seshatz. So it's not usually a matter of congregational practice, but rather one of personal chumrah for standing for Chazar Seshatz.
So generally, basically, you shouldn't do something which will cause everybody else in the shul to stare at you.
Right. So in most shuls, either you have some people standing for Chazar Seshatz and some people sitting. So that's sort of the normal way it is nowadays. But in terms of standing or sitting for Kaddish, so you're going to have in Ashkenazi shul, you're going to have the entire congregation standing for Kaddish, and then you have one or two Sephardim who didn't get the memo, who are going to be sitting. So that's not correct because it's known that it's a congregational practice as opposed to personal.
What about Kriyas HaTorah?
What about it? Kriyas HaTorah also is not everybody agrees is not not everyone, but really it's not halachically required to stand for Kriyas HaTorah.
Just a chumrah that some people have.
Yeah, because you want to make it more like Matan Torah, the original Matan Torah.
People usually sit when they're learning, so if it's like, leave it
right
there, then, that's...
Right. So the same thing, that's more like Chazar Seshatz. It's more like some people have a personal chumrah to stand rather than a congregational practice to stand.
What did the halacha that Shulchan Aruch says women don't put on tefillin, how do they deal with Michal? Is that she was on a...
She was extra holy, so she was allowed to do it. That's exactly it. So let's just one. Let's finish this mitzvah. The overall zev eino maniach tefillin shel yad v'shel rosh bital shmona asei. If you don't put on tefillin, you're going to perform 8 positive commandments. Not literally 8 positive commandments. It's only one each, but since that's mentioned the chumash 4 times, then it's as if it's 8 positive commandments. Sorry, ba'arba parashot tziva kosov al tefillin shel yad v'shel rosh.